I had sworn to myself that I would not tell anyone about what I had experienced, but after finding all of you here, I feel that I can tell this story without everyone thinking I was drunk or high. I've been both, and my brain has never created something as terrifying as this. I grew up in a small town in British Columbia. It's a bit north of Vancouver. I actually work in Vancouver as a programmer for a big tech firm there. I'm not going to say who, because I don't want this to get back to them. I already have a reputation for being unsteady, thanks to some bad choices early in my life. I had finished a rather arduous process that took not only my entire team, but for myself, months to complete, so that it came in on schedule. We're talking 80-hour work weeks, and on the verge of burnout for most of it. My boss had made it clear that when the project was over, I was to take 2 weeks and go home. When I had set out on a Friday evening, the sun had already started its descent, and I knew that I wouldn't get home until very late at night. It did not matter, since my mom and dad were going to let me crash with them. My family has always been supportive of my rehabilitated life and career. They'd do anything to make sure that I succeeded. Honestly, I don't want to beat around the bush and tell you about my life. There is a different time and place. What I wanted to tell you about was the hitchhiker that I picked up on the road. I was 4 hours into a 7-hour drive up Interstate 99 and had just passed a sign marker for Tunnel Point when I saw her. If you don't know this area of Canada, Interstate 99 leaves Vancouver and winds its way along the coast of Horseshoe Bay. The entire winding road has the water out my left-hand window, with the hills and thick northern forests to my right. When it comes to traffic, it's usually feast or famine. Right now, the 2-lane highway was empty, and only blackness hugged the beams of my headlight. A bit of rain fell from the sky, pelting my window, but not enough to make me want to turn on my wipers. I was so tired that I worried that if I took my eyes off the road, I would fall asleep. That was when I saw her. Well, I think it was, because she looked like a woman. She was on the far right side of the road. I could make out the movement of her skirt, and she semi-walked and stumbled on the unpaved side of the road. Immediately I was worried, because I had not seen a car broken down on my journey, and the way she was moving made me wonder if she had been hurt. The closest place was Tunnel Point, but I had passed that a while ago. I glanced at my road clock and saw the yellow numbers for 12:30. Maybe it was the exhaustion, but my concern won out. Slowing my beat-up Honda, I glanced in my rearview mirror to make sure nobody was coming and paced with the stumbling girl. What I could make of the woman was that she had long hair and her clothes were tattered. Since being closer, I noted she swayed as if she were drunk. I rolled down my window and crinkled my nose at the smell of dead leaves coming from the forest nearby. The earthy scent clawed at my nose. God, I hated the forest.
"Hey,"
I called her, trying to be friendly and not scary. I did not want her to think I was some sort of pervert that was going to have my way with her if she got into the car. I truly was worried for her safety. The girl stumbled a bit more, but seems to stop walking, head still facing down at the ground, matted hair stringy and wet. Poor thing looked like she might have dragged herself out of the water.
"Hey, do you need a lift somewhere?"
The girl did not respond. She just stood there, looking at the ground as if mesmerized by the stones. I could not make out much, except that her skin was pale.
"You okay?"
I tried again, deciding that if she did not respond this time, I was absolved of my Good Samaritan duties. Finally giving up, I began to roll up the window when she reached up and placed her hand on the moving glass. I quickly stopped before getting her hand crushed.
"I want to go home."
Her words came in a mixture of wet coughing.
Where's home?" I asked.
All she did was raise her hand and point forward. I noticed her hands were stained with soil, and her nails, once painted, were cracked.
Get in. I'll take you home, I said, ignoring the clawing feeling in my stomach. Since stopping the car, I had found myself looking about as if something were trying to sneak up on me. Of course, nothing was there. The hairs on my arms had begun to tingle, and the urge to get out of there overwhelmed me. The girl fumbled with the door a few times before she was finally able to open it. The door creaked agonizingly slowly as she pulled it open. Finally, she pulled her tattered form into the car and sat in the seat. I finally got a good look at her, and my heart sank. She was a petite girl. I would not call her beautiful, but she had a nice face and a decent figure. She wore a white shirt stained mostly brown and green from both mud and grass. The smell of rotting vegetation had followed her into the car. Her brown hair was long but tangled into thick, crazy knots filled with bramble, weeds, and mud. I could barely make out her eyes, but they were brown and vacant. Thin lines of grass stains streaked across her face with red welts around them, almost as if someone had struck her in the face with a bush. There were scars on her hands, arms, and parts of her legs I could see through the torn skirt. I should have kicked her out. I should have never picked her up. At that moment, I knew that, but it was already too late. How could I kick out someone who obviously looked like they were in trouble?
Where would you like to go?
I asked to search her clothing, and saw it. A flimsy red plastic name tag where the name had almost faded out.
Bethany? Where would you like to go, Bethany?
Home, was all she coughed out. I saw a bit of dirt and saliva fall into her lap, then quickly looked ahead and started the car moving again. For the next 10 minutes, I drove, trying my hardest not to look at the corpse-like woman sitting beside me. Like a fool, I did try a bit of small talk to get more information out of her, but she did not respond. I was thinking so much about what I was doing and how I got myself into this situation, I actually forgot that she was in the car beside me. The things lack of sleep will make you do. It was when I felt her wet hands on my shoulder, soaking through my blue button-up as if she was underwater, I jumped and spun to look at her. Those eyes were focused on me. They were brown like I had surmised, but I could have sworn they were glassy and empty like a fake eye. Either mud or blood had streaked down out of her nostrils, and she had a tight grip on my shoulder.
Up there,
she coughed out, and I saw Bethany was pointing out the window. I saw it. It was a dirt road turning off the main highway into the forest. I did tell you I hated the forest. I did not want to turn. I tried to say something about dropping her off, but the vice-like grip on my shoulder had begun to ache.
Take me home,
she gurgled again. It was at this point that I began to think to myself that what I was dealing with might not actually be human. Slowing my vehicle and turning onto the dirt road, I was glad that I was buckled, and the car rocked back and forth on a road that had not been maintained in years. The forest around felt claustrophobic as the smell of wet leaves and decay permeated my car. I wanted to roll down the window, but my panicked brain told me that something would get in if I did. Even the moon struggled to push through the canopy of foliage overhead. I realized that as I entered a clearing when the rooftop erupted in a thunderous sound. It took me a split second to realize that it had begun to rain heavily. The moon was now out in full force, illuminating the path ahead. My heart dropped as I saw it. We were in the middle of nowhere in the Canadian wilderness, and standing in the middle of this field were 5 massive stone pillars, reaching up towards the heavens. They had to be at least 3 stories, having a thick base that tapered smaller towards the top. This place was not centered in the clearing, but the last few pillars were placed against an ancient-looking forest that felt older than it should have been. as my car reached the end of the dirt road, and for a brief moment, I thought I would be out of here, my car died. It didn't sputter. It didn't choke. It just turned off. It rolled a few feet to a stop, perfectly at the end of the road. The thing with the name tag, Bethany, fumbled for the door a few times before successfully opening it. She fell out onto all fours before slowly and painfully pulling herself up. I was doing my hardest not to panic, but I could feel the tightness in my chest and the suffocating stench clawing at my lungs. I did not want to leave that car, but the smell would have killed me if I didn't. Throwing open the door and falling out myself, I breathed in the clean, wet air and ignored the rain pelting me. Pulling myself up by the warm hood of my car, I decided to look around and found that Bethany had meandered like a zombie into the middle of these tall pillars. It did not appear she had any rhyme or reason to be in there. She just stood there, shoulders slumped, looking ahead at the dark forest and the last two pillars. Now this is the part where I was stupid. I could have just abandoned my car and made a run for it, but curiosity got the better of me. You know that feeling where you think you're safe because nothing is paying attention to you? Yeah, I fell for that trap. I crept forward, trying to keep a low profile, looking between the closest pillar and Bethany, who still had not moved. I closed the distance pretty easily and crouched behind the rough-hewn stone. I glanced down and noticed strange carvings that almost looked like symbols. When I looked back up, Bethany was no longer alone. Standing in the grove with her were about 6 new people, all women, and they looked in the same state as the girl I had brought here. They had formed a semicircle with Bethany at the front of it. It was at this point that I realized that they were also not alone. I could not make them out, but a group of things had appeared between the pillars. They were unnatural, standing at least 7 feet tall, with arms that were stretched down to the ground. Their arms joined in unnatural ways. They seemed to be wearing heavy sailors' outfits, but it was torn and decayed. Their faces were covered in cloth, but I had a sense that whatever was underneath was moving about. I stifled a scream and covered my mouth when I looked to my right and saw the clawed foot of one of those things by me. That foot had 6 toes, but these were not any ordinary toes. They were made out of human fingers. I wanted to run away, but I knew that it would see me, so I stayed hunched down, looking at the gathering. It was then I noticed they had something new. I did not see how it happened, but now in the clearing were a man and a woman. They were not like the others, but struggling against bindings that had their hands tied behind their backs. The rain was still coming down, but the moon illuminated the absolute terror in their faces. Both of them were naked, their feet and legs stained by the mud and grass from around. They had been forced to their knees, facing the forest. I felt something tremor to the ground, and both became still, mostly in abject terror, as I had done. Pressure began to build up in my head, as if something was trying to escape, and I clasped at it, still unable to pull my eyes away from what I was watching. Something in the forest was speaking. I don't know how I knew, but the language was ancient, forbidden, words that defied understanding. But I could somehow, instinctively, understand what it was saying at the time. Now, the words have failed like a bad dream, but I had the foresight to write it down at the end, as you'll find out. Here is what it feels like was being said.
Who comes to the ancient door to the chaos cult?
We, servants of Daek. The woman, including Bethany, chanted back in the same tongue.
Do the blessed seek favor or vice?
The rumbling said again.
We seek nothing
but the glory of Dayek, came the response.
Only through returning to the time of no sun shall the glory be attained.
Death to the light and those who support it, O Dayek.
Bring the feast for those who collect loyalty.
The thing intoned. What I saw next was something that I can only describe, but it still does not do it any justice. The ground seems to be alive as roots of a tree burst from the ground and snaked their way to the naked man who began to scream. His screams were muffled as it seemed dirt was packed tightly into his mouth. The roots snaked up his body, fastening themselves tightly on his limbs. I did not know what was going on until his screaming got louder and the sound of cracking and tearing echoed through the chamber. As if like a paper doll, the man's limbs were slowly pulled one by one from his torso and were flung into the darkness where those tall creatures waited, greedily snapping up. And from the sound, I could only guess they were feeding. The man was still alive and had gone into shock as the vines carried the remains into the dark forest from which the sound was coming. When the blood-stained vines returned, they were empty. The woman had stopped screaming and had been silently weeping. I could only guess she had given up knowing what her fate was going to be. As I would find out, if her fate was the same as the man's, it would have been a mercy. The vines had returned and began to wrap them around her feet and arm, slowly raising her above the ground like the man and holding her over the unholy congregation, the voice thrumming again through the landscape.
The Epoch of Night will return.
Dick.
The time of decay will fill the land once more.
Dick.
And then, the end came for the naked girl. I'm not going to describe it, because you all don't need to have the same memory in your head. But all I'm going to say is that the branches sought out every orifice and forced their way into her body. Her eyes proved to be the most resistant, but from the sound and what I could see, she had been impaled, like some grotesque puppet wailing from the dirt. Holes were pierced as everything in the way was moved, and her blood began to trickle down on the women who had turned their heads upwards. The last thing I saw before the pressure knocked me out was many vines exiting their upturned mouths, reaching to the sky, and the feast above, and something massive in the forest beginning to lift up. When I reawoke, my first thought was that I was next on the menu, but the bright sun beat down on me, and my car idled quietly on the path. Instead of stone pillars, I was at the base of a large tree. They were in the same position, but it did not look like the scene from earlier. I drug my soaked body to the car and somehow made it to my parents. They were shocked to see me in the condition I was in, but did not tell them anything. I slept for 3 days, and they called a doctor. I had nightmares of the voice, and when I woke, I found that I had written the conversation of that horrific night in one of my comic books from my childhood. It's been about a week now, and I still have not gone back to Vancouver. It's not that I don't want to work there, but that stretch of road now terrifies me. I worry that if I go down that path again, I would be the next meal for whatever was living in the Canadian forest. So, that's it. I got nothing else to say. I'm going to post this and hopefully get back to work tomorrow. My dad's going to drive me back to my apartment. I will not be visiting again for quite a long time.